Hello, I'm Father Mitch Paquin. Welcome to EWTN Live, where we bring you guests from around the world. Today, of course, is September 11th, 23 years after the horrific attacks in New York City. And we, of course, need to remember this horrific event that not only caused death and destruction that day to so many people, but instigated wars in Afghanistan and eventually spilling out to other countries as well. And this is an evil act promoting death as a way to get what you want leads to even more death. That's what we saw that day. And what we want to do is remember to pray for the dead and also to pray that our society and every society around the world rejects the tool of Satan, namely death and murder and deception and lies, and that we choose that of Christ, who gives us a peace that surpasses understanding, who extends mercy and forgiveness and truly self-giving love. This is one of our goals. And I wanted to begin today with recalling those horrible events because, in fact, our guest tonight is in New York City as we speak. He is here to discuss how our culture's current moral crisis is a result of a competition between secular and religious visions of society, and how we will have to recapture our religious roots in order to restore normalcy. There's no third way. Now, our guest is the president of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights, and he's also the author of a new book, Cultural Meltdown: The Secular Roots of Our Moral Crisis. Please welcome my friend, very happy to call him that, Bill Donahue. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Can I just say one thing before we begin the book? On that fateful day of 9/11, the Catholic League is located on 34th Street and 7th Avenue, right across from Macy's, Penn Station, and Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. We're on the 34th floor. And it was around 8:50 in the morning, and one of my staffers screamed, and I looked out the window. I didn't see the airplane hit, but what I saw was the aftermath. There was a big hole right in one of the towers. And I thought maybe somebody was on drugs, it was an assassin plane, and the like. Then when I heard somebody else scream and I looked out, I knew exactly what was happening. I knew that this was radical Muslims. There's no question about it. They locked down New York. You couldn't leave. We watched the towers go down like pancakes, one after another. Some of the staff got really quite nervous. You couldn't leave the city. There was a lockdown. I said, "We're getting out of here." They said, "Where are we going?" I said, "We're going for pizza and beer because this is not mentally healthy. You people are freaking out." So we walked down the block. We went into a place, and sure enough, they had the TV on there. I said a prayer, and I was joined by the entire restaurant, including some Jewish guys who joined us in a prayer. I'll never forget what happened that day. And as everybody knows, they weren't yelling Jesus, Mary, and Joseph when they hit the tower. It was Ali, Ali, Akbar. So I knew what devil was at work that day. Yeah. It was a terrible day. I'll never forget it.
And by the way, you need to work on your Arabic. It's Allahu Akbar. Sure. But yeah, you're right. And in that day, there was a religious crisis that was going on. It really had this religious component to it. But it wasn't so much a Muslim response to Christianity, but it was a Muslim response to the way that secularism was being brought into the Middle East in many ways. And we have been dealing with the crisis of a breakdown of religiosity and religious faith in our country. And it's going on for a variety of reasons, as you bring out in your book. And this is a crisis that is tearing our culture apart. That attack on 9/11 of 2001 was an attack that really affected our nation radically, to be sure, and other nations. But we have this internal struggle that is also destructive of our culture. And I think you are going after so many of the issues in your book, Cultural Meltdown. Let's start to take a look. What do you mean by the roots of this moral crisis and cultural crisis?
Right. I would say right now in the culture war, I'm a sociologist, so that's how I look at it in that sense. We have two opposing, irreconcilable visions of man and society. One is rooted in our Judeo-Christian ethos. We believe in God. We believe in truth. We believe in human nature. We believe that the only perfection is in the afterlife. We believe in moral absolutes. Contrast that with the secular vision. They don't believe in God. They're smarter than God. They don't believe in truth. They don't believe in moral absolutes. They believe in moral relativism. They believe that you can have perfection here on earth if you just let the utopians take command and they're going to deliver this nirvana. So we have nothing in common. They think truth is a fiction. Now, who's winning, who's losing? I can give you some good arguments on both sides. I'm saying this. It hasn't flushed out yet. One side eventually will eclipse the other. There are some encouraging signs on our side. There's also some discouraging signs. But basically, the argument, what I'm make the viewers understand, the problem is not the American people. The average man and woman, the average Joe, is a good person. They just want to go to work and take care of their family and their life. That's the average one. Mm-hmm. The problem is the elites. It's the ruling class. It's the decision makers. In the past, the secular vision was entertained in the academy, in higher education, college and universities, in the artistic community, in the entertainment community out in Hollywood and the like, and in the media. Today, this woke idea of there's no such thing as truth, this political correctness, that has captured the leaders of the corporate 500. It's infected the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It's also affected the people at the top echelons of the healthcare industry. In other words, we have a major gap in this country between the average person and the elites who do not represent us.
Yeah. I think this is something that is extremely important to pay attention, that by elites, you have so many folks who are wealthy beyond the imagination of so many Americans. I mean, America is an extraordinarily wealthy nation. And we have quite a large number of billionaires and millionaires. And they are very much in the business of trying to reshape society using their finances to help reshape it. So there's that element, but also there is the role of the university, that so many people are going to college. They are not getting skills that will help them make a good living when they get out of college. They're gaining an ideology that makes them very dissatisfied with society. And we see, for instance, that in the campuses today, there is less freedom of speech at the elite universities, especially. The more elite a university, the less freedom of speech there is. And it was much more free in speech at a medieval university in Europe with the Inquisition keeping an eye on things than it is with the left keeping an eye on things in modern universities.
Well, I just want to let the viewers know that that's not an educated opinion. The surveys back up everything you said is accurate. Let me give you one specific right now.
Sure.
Last year, Real Clear Opinion polling, they're not exactly an arm of the conservative movement, they did a study of free speech in this country. They concluded, these people who are more on the left than they are on the right, this is not Father Mitch or Bill Donahue speaking, they concluded that the people who believe in free speech the most in America today are Republicans and conservatives. And the people who believe in the least amount of free speech are the ones who are Democrats and liberals. They want to censor us. They think, they literally believe that we have too much freedom in this country. That's because they want to, they're engaged in thought control. Now, listen, I spent many years, 16 years as a professor, 20 years in education. I spent 20 years on the board of directors of the National Association of Scholars. I know quite well that everything you said about free speech on the campuses is true. As I've said before on radio and TV, and I'm going to say it again, there is more free speech allowed in your local pub than there is in your local college or university. It's a shame that they have free speech zones on college campus. What do you mean free speech zones? I have to stand in a circle, talk to other students about controversial subjects like abortion? You go into a pub, you speak about anything you want. No, it's incredible what's happened. The left in this country is the enemy of freedom of speech. And they used to say, well, we're the tolerant ones, and we believe in diversity. The only diversity they believe in is one based on anatomy. They don't believe in terms of ideas. The only diversity that matters is diversity of ideas. And that's the one thing they want to crush.
One of the points that you bring up very strongly in your book is the issue, and you mentioned it already in this program, that the left ideologically denies truth. And you, I like the way you give a very succinct presentation of the fathers of this thought, like Michel Foucault. Most people don't know who he is. He was, by the way, on the side, a very abusive pedophile. He would go to Libya and toss money out to boys. And then whoever got the most money came over to him for more. And they would he would abuse them sexually. This is Michel Foucault, who says there's no meaning. And then Jacques Derrida, who is another founder of Deconstruction, and his influence on the university campuses, especially in the English literature departments, is destroying the familiarity of our students with Shakespeare and the Greek dramatists and any of the other great literature of our wonderful language. He's destroyed. But these people teach that there is no such thing as truth, and in very radical ways, as you point out, they teach that everybody makes up their own truth. You make up your own meanings of words. And then even at places like the National Teachers Union, you have the leader of the National Teachers Union saying that 2 + 2 can equal 5, and that is a truth we will defend. I mean, it's a line out of 1984, because what they always do is when they have no truth that they can share in between people, then the only way to resolve differences is through absolute force. If I have my truth and you have your truth, the way we resolve our differences is by force, and therefore it becomes might makes you right, which of course that's not true, but that is their ideology. And that's what 1984 is about, but that is the program pushed by the people in charge of the National Teachers Union and many of the, and not all teachers by any means, but the leadership of the on the left is pushing this. And this is why it's destroying our society. They become absolute autocrats like Mao Zedong and Stalin.
Well, you're absolutely right. And you're right to mention these are all French intellectuals who gave us the idea, Derrida and Foucault. They should know, and people, the viewers should understand, there's another person who agrees with them. His name is Adolf Hitler. He literally said there's no such thing as truth. Yep. And that just sustains your last point. That's where the power comes in. Listen, Foucault died in the early 1980s. I know most people never heard of him. He was regarded at that time as the greatest intellectual in the world. That's what he was regarded as. The man was a child rapist. The man was a drug addict. He said AIDS doesn't exist. It was a social construct that we just made it up. Guess what he died of? A social construct. I didn't know social constructs killed until he came along. But it was the French intellectuals in the 1960s who gave us the idea of postmodernism. It sounds like a big word, people. All it means is that truth doesn't exist. Truth is a fiction. Now, there is a woman philosopher whom I quote in my book by the name of Laurie Calhoun. Now, she believes that there's no such thing as truth. A philosopher who does have his head screwed on straight, David Detmar, said, wait a minute, if you don't believe anything is truth, I got to ask you one question. Are giraffes taller than ants? Now, a preschool kid could answer that. She said, no, that's a matter of religious faith. See, I say that we don't.
I would have thought it's a matter of African observation.
I think we need to build more asylums. Half the people in the academy probably belong there. Now, look, I know there are a lot of good professors. I know still many of them. I was one for many years. But unfortunately, higher education is loaded with a lot of dysfunctional people, miserably unhappy with themselves. They're unhappy with God. They're unhappy with human nature. They're unhappy with Western civilization, with the United States. And these are the people, these miserable people who are teaching our kids, and they believe that that truth is malleable. You know, it is amazing. I had a situation with the professors one time. They were objecting to correct spelling. I'm not making this up, viewers. I'm sitting around a big table of professors. They say there's no such thing as correct spelling. That's logocentrism. We're making too much out of the word. So, and other people around the table were nodding in agreement. So I thought maybe they're all gone crazy. So I threw a monkey wrench into it, and the entire place was absolute stone silence. I said, okay, I think I understand what you mean. If you're saying that the spelling doesn't count, you won't object then. The next time that the finance office mails out your paycheck and they scramble your name and address, you're not going to object about that because there's no such thing as correct spelling. Is that right? Oh, my God. The smiles went off their face. They looked at me. Oh, if looks could kill, I would have been dead 10 times over. Nobody in the room had an answer. Nobody in the room had an answer. So why do we believe this fiction? There's only one truth. There are not two truths. And that's just it. September 11th is when the horrific bombing took place of the World Trade Center. It wasn't on the 10th. It wasn't on the 12th. So people have to understand, and we know it as Catholics, that there is one truth, and that's the truth of Jesus Christ and the truth that the Catholic Church teaches. But we live in a society today where the secularists deny God, truth, moral absolutes. They believe in moral relativism. Yeah, so did truth. So did Hitler. So did Stalin. And so did Mao Zedong.
As one of the points that I make, you mentioned Foucault and Derrida. As being in the 60s, the time when they're doing this. These were young people who survived the Nazi invasion of France. And one of the things that I have thought frequently is that when Hitler brought about his ideology, which had as its core belief, people, again, you're absolutely right, people don't remember this because we don't get copies of Mein Kampf. People are afraid to read it or even have it on a bookshelf because it was such an evil book. But as my own fellow Chicago citizen Al Capone used to say, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. You need to know what Hitler said about there being no such thing as truth and no morality. And of course, he preferred to be a vegetarian himself, but for everything else, there was no morality. And these philosophers suffered the consequences of his relativistic and violent insistence on total authority in their own lives, because they were born, you know, during the time of the war, if not before, and they suffered through. And then, instead of reflecting on how evil that relativism was, they went and adopted it and helped to create the evil to continue on. This is one of the dumbest kinds of philosophical responses any thinker has ever made in the West. You adopt that philosophy that destroyed the culture that made you so cynical that you now say there's no truth. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a form of societal suicide.
Yep.
I want the viewers to know, we've been talking about how truth doesn't exist. That's what they believe, the secularists. They might say, well, give me an example in the real world of how that flushes out. That's just an idea. Chapter 4 in Cultural Meltdown is on transgenderism, the idea that I can change my sex, everything is fluid. Quite frankly, if you believe that there's no such thing as truth, then of course you can believe that a boy can become a girl and vice versa. That's what leads to the child abuse that we see today. It all begins with the idea there's no such thing as truth. But in reality, you're either XX or you're XY. There's no XYZ. You're either male chromosome or female chromosome. You can try to change your sex, fine. You can try to fly and throw yourself out the window, but you can't succeed. And here's what I want to say. The Catholic Church is responsible for the age of science. We are not anti-science. We love science. It comports with us. We know when our DNA begins. It's at conception. We understand that abortion is wrong. The same thing here with the idea of gender ideology. The people who say that you can change your sex are anti-science, all right? They are anti-science. They're also anti-woman, because when you have men competing against girls and boys, you have boys and girls competing against the other sex, you're going to destroy it. Women have a right to compete against women. And the idea that boys can use the shower facility of girls, which is being supported by the Biden-Harris administration, and you mentioned the teachers union, the National Education Association, which is the largest labor union in the United States, they believe, as they do in California by law and the Biden administration, parents should not be told, if you have a minor, if you have a teenager, or someone even younger than a teenager, if that person wants to, quote, transition to the other sex, you are no right to know about that. This is a war on parental rights. It all begins with this idea that men and boys should be able to compete with the woman and the like. And by the way, 80% of all the people transitioning are young girls trying to become boys. Those girls need help. We need to reach out to them. But they're being used by therapists. They're being used by teachers. They're being used by the medical profession. And there's big money in this, Father Mitch. It's not just a matter of ideology. Yes. It's a billion-dollar enterprise. But let me just end this by saying one thing. I'm not a pessimist. Here's the good news, people. The vector of change is going our way. In Europe, they are moving away from this idea that you can switch the sex. Sex reassignment surgery is not being done in Holland, in France, in Britain. They're the ones who started this back in 2011, the Dutch, and now they've admitted they had a faulty survey. Guess who's in last place? Unfortunately, the United States and Canada. It's the elites who believe that you can change this. Do you know that when they survey whites and blacks about can you change your sex, that blacks are smarter than whites? They say, no, you can't change your sex. Now, why is it that whites are dumber than blacks when it comes to believing this elite nonsense that you can change your sex? It goes back to what you just said before. It goes back to the academy. It goes back to the college campuses. That's where this stuff is being taught. It's poison. It's not education. It's indoctrination.
And when various medical experts, I once had a pediatric endocrinologist on this program discussing how the obvious, what you just said, that no matter what kind of surgery you do to a person, child or adult, in terms of taking out their sexual organs and secondary sexual organs. Every single cell remains XX if you're born a female, or XY if you're born a male. You cannot change that. But then you start putting in the wrong, and I'm going to say the word wrong, hormones into a body. A body whose XX chromosomes are expecting to receive estrogen now start getting artificial pumps of testosterone, or vice versa. A child who was born male with XY in every single cell, chromosomes in every cell, and they start pumping it with estrogen, it would be, and I'm a simple man, I don't, you know, I just use this example because my dad was a mechanic and so was my brother, but it would be like putting diesel fuel into a gasoline engine or gasoline into a diesel engine. You're going to ruin the engine either way. And so their life expectancy of these children is reduced by 50%. Half of their life expectancy is cut off. So they have a life expectancy of 40. And that is if they don't commit suicide, because their suicide rate is 42%. That's what the Europeans learned the hard way. And professors who publish this are not allowed to publish it in the professional journals because the academy won't allow scientific data to be published in their own journals because the science goes against ideology. This is my truth, that it's okay, and you cannot give me other facts that contradict my truth. That's the difficulty that we're dealing with.
And that's why I say they are anti-science. We're not the ones who are anti-science. And I want the viewers to pay attention to language. They talk about gender, what gender you are. I'm a sociologist. That's what my doctorate's in. Gender being socially learned norms and values that are appropriate for boys and girls, male and female. In other words, the right term is sex. Now, why don't they use the word sex? Why do they use a sociological term, gender, which refers to socially learned norms? Because when you mention sex, you're talking about nature. That's the third rail. Once you start talking about nature, you might start talking about nature's God. None of this is by mistake. And they say to you, oh, what sex, what gender, when they should say sex, what gender were you assigned at birth? Nobody ever assigns your sex. The father determines, the father and the father alone determines the sex of the child. That's biology 101. That's not an opinion. That's rooted in science. Yep. People don't have, they have these gender reveal parties, which really should be sex reveal parties. What are they saying? They're saying nobody assigned you. That was determined much earlier at conception. So we're being lied upon right from the beginning. You know, I was at a doctor's office about a year or so ago. I forget what it was, something the big forms was, you know, all about my different genders and whatnot, and my fluid and abinary. I don't know what, they're all crazy. So I just put a big X right through the whole thing and just wrote nonsense. And then I submitted to two or three girls who were working there in the staff, and they started cracking up laughing because they know that these people are crazy. I said, let me tell you something. Your boss, I don't care, male or female, white or black, I don't care. Go show this to them. And if they have a problem with this, let them speak to me directly, because I'm not going to put up with this. And I'm encouraging the viewers to do the same. I don't expect everybody to be a cultural warrior, okay? I get paid to do it. This is my life. And I don't expect you to go out there and lose your job and get kicked out of school. I am saying that time out once in a while. When people push you too far with this, simply say, I'm sorry, that's not true, and I cannot accede to your request. You have to put your foot down at some point, because otherwise this is thought control. And that's what they're very good at. They are the masters of thought control.
And I think we can make better decisions. I mean, it's September and school has begun in many places already, so it's a little late for this school year. But for people to pay attention to where you go to school and what they're teaching you. COVID, you know, made a big, that was a big reveal, a mind reveal of what the teachers were forcing on students. And for parents to choose schools whenever they can, where they're going to learn about facts and truth. And when students who are now in, say, seniors in high school are starting to consider universities, where are you going to be able to have freedom of speech and freedom of thought? Don't be looking only for, oh, it's really got a beautiful gym and the student center is really wonderful and there's rock climbing in there. And furthermore, the food is good. Don't go for the cake decorations. Find out if you can talk, if you have freedom of speech, and if you can learn the truth, because that's what you will take away with you if you finish school, and that's crucial. Bill, we have to take a little break. I want to come back to you in just a moment, so please stay with us, all of you, please. Welcome back. We are discussing a relatively new book called Cultural Meltdown, The Secular Roots of Our Moral Crisis, and it's by our guest, Bill Donahue. You can purchase this by going to EWTNRC.com, our religious catalog. It is item 2464. And you can also, when you're there, you can check out some of his other books, also at EWTN's religious catalog, because Bill, as a sociologist, has been very alert to the way that these social changes are being affected by people with a lack of faith and how people of faith can address them, and then the impact that this has on people of faith. So this is a very serious issue for all of us. Now, Bill, you mentioned some of the, you know, what are practical areas. I think, you know, as we take a look at the election for president, that, you know, one of the things that all of us, what, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or an independent, if you are with the Socialist Party or the Green Party or the Democratic Party, doesn't matter. We all need to know what has each candidate actually said, where are they today, because I'll grant that people change their minds. But if they do change their mind, we want to know why. And this is something that's been coming out in terms of what people in the candidates in this election hold.
Well, that's true. I mean, just take Kamala Harris, for example. She was put in charge of the border by President Biden. She was the border czar. Now she claims that she was never there. But they had her on tape. This is not a matter of opinion. We're back again. There is such a thing as truth. She was in charge of the border, which is precisely why she went to Guatemala. When she got to Guatemala, I hope the viewers understand this, I'm not misinterpreting, the president there said, listen, you're responsible for the open border. You're the only ones who really can close it. It's not us. We're not in charge of that. And so now she's trying to say she's concerned about the border. Where has she been for 3.5 years? They've let a record number of people come into this country, crashed our borders. Sure, some of those people are very good people, but too many of them are not. And I live in New York City, right near where the migrants are. I can tell you what I see every day. She was in charge of that. She was in charge. She was the one who also said, basically took the side of defund the police and Black Lives Matter. Now, all of a sudden, she's Ms. Law and Order. You can't just flip 180 degrees on central issues like this and expect to be believed.
Well, and this is the thing. If she has changed her mind, seems that she has, then I have no problem with that.
Right.
But there's also a need for all of us to understand what is the moral issue at stake that caused you to change your mind on these issues. And that we need to understand. We can understand. We're not children. And we want to understand what your position is now, why you changed, and help us to think through this so that as a citizenry, we can form our own consciences and think freely about these issues. But freedom of thought also requires good information, that we need to have informed thought. And for us to be free to question and ask and get answers about what your position is, what it isn't. And this is something we have to apply to every single politician, whether it's former President Trump, Vice President Harris, whoever it might be. All of them have to have this as an issue.
That's right, and that's why I prefer to, well, okay, Republican or Democrat. By the way, I'm neither. I started as a Democrat, I quit, I became a Republican and I quit. I'm happily independent. And I have to go after Republicans and Democrats in this job, and I will continue to do so because no one's going to have a lean on the Catholic League. Now, what you're saying is so true. You know, if you have a vision, a philosophical vision about society, I may agree with you, I may disagree with you, but at least then I can look for some degree of consistency. Ronald Reagan had a vision of how America should be. You could agree with it or disagree with it, but it was important to him to import that vision to his staff so that everybody whom he hired understood where he wanted to take the country. Unfortunately today, too many politicians have no vision about the good society. So all they do is they change with the wind. They just take a look at the polls. They're a liberal today, they're conservative tomorrow. They just go with the wind. And it's not just politicians. I can tell you over the years, the number of people whom I knew who worked at MSNBC, who were wonderful people, many of them even still working there and have their own show. But they decided to go left, and they turned on a dime. I mean, people don't have the integrity of their own vision. You should be able to, of course, change your mind, but there should be at least some degree of consistency then that you can explain philosophically. But you're an intellectual, so you're looking at it that way. Same with me. Unfortunately, too many people in public life are just there to win, and they don't really care how they win.
Yeah. And this is, there's another topic here that that we can move into, because you covered in your book, and that is, on one hand, the utopian ideas and ideals of so many people on the left. They want to create a perfect society. However, what we see is a range of attitudes about destroying what already exists in order to make it possible for them to create a utopian society. So you'll see some people will be of the mindset, well, you have to break a few eggs to make an omelet. But they're not referring to eggs. They're talking about people's lives. They're willing to destroy people's lives. And in the 20th century, between the wars and the genocides and the political persecutions by the Marxists, 304 million people died violently, often usually in the name of these ideologies. And you see, especially on the far left, the Marxist side of things, they would like to just sweep away. They always remind me of somebody who comes to the beach, knocks down somebody's sandcastle, and thinks they can build a better castle out of sand. And the left knows better how to destroy, but they never create anything except terror. It's been the left, especially the Marxist left with communism, or the socialist left with the Nazis, because that's what Nazi means, National Socialist Workers' Party. The socialists and the Marxists have the same idea. We'll sweep away everything before us and we'll create something. And what they created was hellish. What do you see going on with the utopianism or idealism of the left today?
Well, let me just say, you gave a very good synopsis there. And let me tell the viewers, where does this begin? What Father Mitch just said. It begins with the rejection of original sin.
Yes.
We as Catholics believe in original sin. Do we believe in progress? Yes. Do we believe in perfection? Not here on earth. But if you reject God and you reject nature and you reject truth and you reject moral absolutes and the Ten Commandments, you're obviously going to take the position that, no, original sin doesn't exist. We were all born de novo from the beginning, all nice and clean, and we could have a Garden of Eden. All we have to do is get the right people in control of the command centers. We can redo human nature. It's malleable. It's like a piece of putty. We can change people. We know as Catholics that that's insane. It's more than insane. It leads to body bags, as you correctly said, because when people disagree with you now, they're going to pay the price for it. And that's the danger. Utopianism sounds like it's a good idea. And by the way, the word translated means no place. They should have figured that out. But Hitler was a utopian. People think that he was just out there to kill Jews. It was more than that. He thought he was going to create the good society. This was going to be listening to the Volk, listening to the people. We're going to create the wonderful society. We're all bonded together. And the same thing was true of Stalin. And the same thing was true of Mao. And the same was true of Pol Pot. They all turned out to be the greatest monsters in history. Human nature is fixed. God does exist. Original sin exists. There are moral absolutes. And if you don't believe in that, you will wind up like these visionaries. Now, it's interesting. Whatever you might say about Karl Marx, and I can say a lot, there's a lot about him in the book, which I'm not going to get into right now. Marx did believe in the good society. He said, capitalism, well, we're going to crush it, and then we'll have socialism, and then we'll have communism, and then everybody will be so free, you won't even have a police force. We all get along well in the Garden of Eden. Of course, it didn't exist. But give him credit for one thing. At least his end goal was to create a good society, even though he didn't understand human nature, and he created the bloodbath of his followers. It's interesting what's happened today. They've looked at what happened with the Soviet Union. The left has seen that. They've seen what's happened under Mao. They've seen, 150 million people killed by totalitarians in the 20th century alone. Many of them have now actually, for the Mitch, they've given up. So at the end of my book, I talk about that. The left is now mentally and morally and intellectually bankrupt. They're exhausted. They have no new ideas, and some of them are actually admitting to it. In other words, they don't have a prescription for the good society. So like the little boy who can't put together the erector set and he takes a hammer and destroys it, that's what we have today. Antifa, remember during the riots during COVID? All right, yep. The guys, the white guys with the mask on themselves, setting police cars on fire and destroying Minneapolis, Portland, Seattle, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, all over the country, and Black Lives Matter. These are not utopians. They know that they don't have the answer for the good society. Instead of saying, well, maybe I'll just check out. No, they want to destroy everything that we have, and they have no blueprint for anything good in the end. They're worse than the Marxists.
Yep. And we see this going on now as citizens side with Hamas and the Iran and make this new movement that becomes anti-Semitic in your own city. Some of them were saying on the subway, are there any Zionists on this train? And they said, good, no? Okay, good. I mean, you think that Jewish people are gonna speak up in the face of that? It would be like standing up to the brown shirts in the mid-1930s. These people are creating a new kind of terror. And, a new anti-Semitism and the endangerment of Jewish people right now is not going to be limited to them. These same people will attack Muslims when they find that convenient, and they will certainly go back to attacking Catholic churches and other churches, but especially Catholic churches, as they did in 2020, desecrating, setting on fire Mission San Gabriel in California and other churches. They will go back to that. And we have to stand against this kind of chaos for the evil it is. They remind me of the time that our Lord had crossed the Sea of Galilee to the east side, which is where the Gentiles lived. And on that east side of the lake, he came across a man who had a legion of demons. A legion was usually 5,500 to 6,000. And so there's a legion of demons inside of him. And they say, don't send us back to our own place. Even the demons don't want to go to the hell they created. They said, send us into the pigs. And what do? They destroy the pigs. They drowned them in the lake. And this is exactly how these people act. They will destroy everything around them. You let them go to do what they want, they become destructive. And it is this very demonic quality. Not that they're possessed, but they have rejected God and chosen evil. And they are self-destructive as the Nazis and the communists were.
You know, and let me pick up what you just said there so cogently. I'm a native New Yorker. New York City, unlike most parts of America, is not really dominated by Protestants. It's Catholic and Jewish, almost exclusively. Now, this is a city where I have a lot of Jewish friends. They've been involved in a lot of demonstrations with us, fighting against anti-Catholicism. I fought with them against anti-Semitism. I thought I would never see the day where you walk down 7th Avenue, New York, and you see these Palestinian, really pro-Hamas, let's face it, pro-Hamas yeah. protesters with swastikas, waving swastikas, taunting Jews. I thought I would never see this day in New York City. Now, people have said to me, how can you have Queers for Palestine? Why would gays be in favor of Hamas when Hamas kills people who are homosexuals simply because they're homosexual? But the one thing that the Islamists, I'm talking about the radical Muslims, not talking about average Muslims, I'm talking about the radical 9/11 type Muslims. The one thing that they have in common with the crazies on the LGBT community and the left in general is that they hate America. They hate Western civilization. They hate Israel. They are willing to break bread with people whom they know if the Islamists took over, they'd be the first ones in their heads in the guillotine. But they don't think that'll ever happen. They want to destroy America so badly that they will actually break bread with people who have professed to kill them if they were to succeed. That's how deep the hatred is here. And that's the thing that really scares me about this. We're not talking about people who are disagreeable. And I hope people understand, we're not talking about liberals. We're talking about radicals. There is a difference. We're talking about the far left. We're talking about the extremists. Unfortunately, they have tremendous power. And when they can take over Columbia University in New York City, not too far from where we're at, and the university collapses, they don't do anything. They allow the hate speech to exist. That's because they've lost sight. The university was founded for one purpose. It's not freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is an important means to an end. The end is the pursuit of truth. That's why we have the academy. That's why we don't bring in the Flat Earth Society people into Columbia. They can have their speech at Madison Square Garden, the Beacon Theater, Central Park, because it's an open forum. But if you believe in the pursuit of truth, then people who obviously don't believe in truth, they say the Holocaust never existed, the Earth is flat, let them speak in Central Park, but not in a college or university. And so when these people are taking the side of people who want to kill innocent Jews because they're Jews, for that own reason, why they would have a legitimate place, they have no more right to be there than the Flat Earth Society people or the people who deny the Holocaust. Let them go someplace else, but not on a college campus.
This brings up something that is, I think, very important, a point of your book. And that is, now, how do we respond? one of the points that we've both been making, and that you make very strongly here, is that the left will not tolerate Catholics and other Christian thinkers speaking up for our position, speaking up for God, against abortion, against euthanasia, speaking up for the existence of objective truth. This gets crushed, not by arguments, but by shouting down any opposition. If you speak against anti-Semitism in New York City, you get shouted down. And we are called to have, and I think this is one of the points I get from your book, we're called to be courageous and to stare down what people that I would consider to be classic cowards. They're hiding behind masks. They're beating down people who are defenseless. And they act like classic bullies. How do we have the courage to stand up to them? And we have about 3 minutes.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the courage, because it's not important. It's not enough to say, well, I understand what's going on and I disagree. You can do that over a cup of coffee, over a beer. You need to have courage. It's not just enough to be informed. You have to be able to act and have the wisdom and have the courage to act on what you know is right. As I said before, I don't expect everybody to be a cultural warrior. I get paid to do it. But you can do what we do at the Catholic League. If we're offended, like we were, remember over the summer with the Olympics and they had that Last Supper parody, the opening ceremony? We find out the email of the people who have offended us. We put it up on our website. It doesn't cost you any money, people. If you want to join the Catholic League, we'd love to have you join and pay $30 a year to join. If you don't want to do that, I don't care. At least get on our website at CatholicLeague.org, and you will see that we have a nice staff. We will find the email of the people who have offended us and put it out there, and then you can register your complaint. When they get bombarded by tens of thousands of emails, it blows it up. We've been able to win a number of culture wars because people say, wait a minute, I didn't think we stepped on such a landmine. We're not asking everybody to lose their job or get kicked out of school. You have to be prudential. Remember, prudence is the most cardinal of the cardinal virtues. But that's not an excuse not to do something. You've got to just quietly tell people, if you're at a party and somebody offends you, well, because they make an anti-Catholic remark, you can say, excuse me, I didn't appreciate that. So there are things that can be done. But it all begins locally. Find out what's going on in your local school board. And let me tell you something. Orthodox Jews are better than Catholics on this. They will send their children to a yeshiva, an Orthodox school, but they will still get on the school boards in the public schools because they don't like what the public schools are doing, which affects their children. So my point is this: if you're a Catholic and you're sending your kids to a Catholic school, that's fine. But don't say, well, therefore, I shouldn't get involved in the local school board, the local public school board. Do as the Orthodox Jews do. Run for those offices, too. Yep. A lot of this stuff happens locally. You can't change the world overnight. Your mother Teresa said, don't try to save everybody. Just try to save one person. We have to be prudential and exercise common sense.
I would add there, because I went to a meeting of one of the public libraries, get on the public library boards. They at one of the local public libraries, the children's section had 3 pornographic books I cannot describe on the air, and they defended it. You have to be on those boards. You have to be in your local towns and city councils. And these are the places where we start. And don't worry, know who your judges are, who your district attorney's candidates. Be involved in these local areas. You're more likely to see the judge than the president. Find out what they're up to. Bill, I'm afraid we're out of time, but I'm so glad, always glad to see you and hear what you have to say. And thank you for joining us. And I'd like to bless you and all of our audience. May Almighty God bless you and keep you, and cause his face to shine upon you. May our Lord lead you and guide you with courage and peace in all of your ways. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. And again, we want you to check out CatholicLeague.org to find out more what they're doing and take a look at this great book, Cultural Meltdown, The Secular Roots of Our Moral Crisis by our guest, Bill Donahue. Get that at Religious Catalog with his other books, EWTNRC.com. Thank you for your support to keep this network going and pay all of our bills. God bless you and thank you.